Donald in the Kitchen talks about food. Donald in the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald in the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donald in the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa, the center of everything. Yes, it is. Well, we've had a little taste of winter.
A dusting of snow.
Kind of slippery there on Saturday night. I was trying to drive a little bit. I didn't have to go out of town.
Yeah, and I made a serious miscalculation this year. You know, we had all these long fall, beautiful weather days, and I kept waiting for all the leaves to fall so I could finish off my winter things, which included cleaning the gutters and taking the hoses in, and now it's all frozen solid. I hope I didn't destroy the hoses.
Good luck to your hoses. Mm. Ah, when winter hits. We've been really spoiled this winter, and it hit. But yeah, it came winter, no?
It came surprisingly fast. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. I don't know.
We think somehow it's not going to be winter. What a change. It is winter, and believe it or not, I think it's early, but I'm getting lots of seed catalogs in the mail. They used to come after Christmas.
Oh, my goodness, really?
I'm getting lots, but actually considering the fact that when I was ordering seeds last year in January, people must be ordering lots more seeds because things kept running out of stock. And so I'm going to jump on the bandwagon and kind of get my list going. But it seems awfully early.
Right. So even in the middle of planning all the Christmas, now you have to plan the garden?
Yeah.
That seems like maybe between Christmas and New Year's you can do
that. Yeah, I can do that. That'd be fine. I kind of wait for them all to show up, so I've got a pile to look for. Of course, I already sort of, you know what you're going to order.
You know what you're going to want anyway.
But still, it does make you feel warm going through the seed catalogs and seeing all the pictures of the giant vegetables. You know, they get all the really small children and the small people to stand next to those pumpkins and the ears of corn, or the stalks of corn, and they make them look gigantic.
I had a funny thing happen. You know those little miniature pumpkins, the decorative ones that you raised? So they were in the house for a long time, and then, I don't know, about a week ago, I just kind of put them out on the banister of the back porch. I thought, oh, those are kind of cute there. The next day, I look out, and they're bigger, you know, they're like apple size, practically, or slightly. Here is a squirrel with the whole thing in his, you know, he's got his teeth sunk into it, and he's running up the tree with it. And it must have weighed as much as he did. Loved it.
That's a good use for those.
He loved it.
Good for them.
He'll
good
get his beta carotene, so.
We are. Pikey Crabber took it home for Christmas. I bet he did.
Yeah.
So, we are sliding into the holidays, and I think we've survived Black Friday. I hope you consider buying less and loving more this year. I mean, we don't need lots of things, but people are looking forward to the holidays, and maybe you can just go into the kitchen and make something good and treat your family that way. Today on the Donald in the Kitchen, we're going to talk about cookies and fudge and things that we can look forward to. It's time to make that list.
And some of those things you need to start in advance.
Yes, we will be talking about that. And we've got some cookbooks to look at, including this book called Company by Amy Thielen. And it's got a lot of some nice little things to share.
So and we like Amy Thielen because she's very Midwestern.
Yeah, it doesn't.
She is from northern Minnesota, and she lets you know it.
It's good. So if you want some good Midwestern suggestions, that's a good thing. So we're going to have had it today, talking about cookies and holiday baking. And Donna's got something to say about liqueurs. They seem to show up in recipes, and I have many questions on that subject. But first, let's think about the days getting shorter here.
Because they are.
They are. It'll sneak up on us. And...
Well, not only are the days getting shorter, of course, we're getting to solstice, my favorite day to have a party. I think it's also full moon right now.
Oh, it is. It's gorgeous outside. Mm-hmm. It really is. Cold. And Orion is kind of peeking up over the trees. It's December. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Here's some thoughts from cookbook writer Amy Thielen about the days getting shorter this time of year.
This is in a cookbook, mind
you. It's in a cookbook. What? This is a great cookbook. She's got all these little thoughts in here. And, you know, we're always thinking. Here's what she says. It's 4:30 in the afternoon, around the time of the winter solstice. Here in the north, she's talking northern Minnesota, the sun slinks off and the sky turns an eerie deep blue. Within an hour, it'll be dense black, turning the window over my sink into a mirror. These are the shortest days of the year, but somehow they feel like the longest. The evenings yawn. By Friday night, when I'm making supper, we're kind of anxious for things to happen. So there's some last-minute calls to invite people over. And their calls are always met with a breathless yes. I can understand why the early pagans celebrated the winter solstice. The silver lining of these short days and long nights is that they provide the perfect moody conditions for happy hour. Nothing will knock down an overactive sense of duty quite like a ridiculously early sundown. It's good to remember to go to somebody else's kitchen with different lighting, different food, different people, have a good meal, and then slink off back into the dark, going back home the way you came.
So she also talks about in her book that because she's very rural where she is, and there are, of course, no restaurants to go out to, that you, amongst your circle of friends, tend to make your own, you know, your own, trips to each other's houses and have meals sitting around the table. So you kind of create your own restaurant moments, only it's completely private and, you know, at your own home. And that's really what her whole book called Company is about, different settings for entertaining. Now, we like to do that here in Ames. We have a few restaurants, but mostly if we want something unusual to eat, we have to make it ourselves.
Which is, and Donna, you've given me the courage to try. I mean, I've always kind of been interested in food and things, and I'd see something online or see something in a cookbook, and sometimes you just kind of need a little bit of moral support. So you've been a good boost to my cooking
experience. Lana's being really modest. She is the supreme pie and cookie maker.
Well, yeah, but there's other things to make, too. And pie and cookie making, that has been a process. Sometimes they don't work. They are good anyway, but they're a little burned or they're a little kind of maybe left something out. You learn by doing. Don't expect to do something perfect all the time. But it's time to think about those cookies. And Donna, just kind of thinking into the cookie baking and the Christmas baking, you found out some things about that thing that we cannot get through Christmas without. Christmas sprinkles.
Oh, yeah. Things that you put on their decorations, really.
Yeah, for, it's cut candied sugars.
Yeah, and especially Lana, who makes all these cut-out cookies and decorates them and stuff. A couple of things I saw, actually just 3 days ago, there was a new release by Burlap and Barrel, which is that online, ethically sourced, all kinds of herbs and spices and some really, really delicious stuff. So they have put out a line of Christmas sprinkles, but they have nice flavors to them.
Christmas sprinkles usually have no flavors, or they're just sugar.
And they also don't have any artificial colors in them, which is a whole nother big deal. So they make an assortment. You can have plain vanilla sprinkles, or you can have rose sprinkles, or the third combination is, let's see, what was it? Cardamom, cinnamon, and what was the third? I can't remember.
Nutmeg?
Maybe.
It was a Christmassy, fallish combination.
Yeah, three spices, you know, obviously different colors for each, but mixed in the regular sprinkles with no artificial flavors or colors. I, of course, ordered some immediately, so we'll let you know when we get them in the mail. But that was kind of exciting. And then we went to Wheatsville Co-op, where they also have sprinkles with no artificial, I mean, we now know that red artificial number blah, 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 blah is really not, no bueno. It's not particularly good for you. And we suspect there may be other issues with other artificial colorings. So there is the Watkins brand. There was also another brand that I didn't recognize. They have two different brands of kind of sprinkles, or one bottle had blue and white stars and, you know, things, decorating items, right? And colored sugars, like a red one and a green one. Now, I have to say, of course, the colors are not that bright.
They're not day glow.
No, they're not.
Colors, yes.
But, you know, I thought they were kind of pretty. They're more pastel-y,
yeah,
kind of.
Think rustic country. I sort of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. And I actually bought a bottle of these Watkins sprinkles. It's supposed to be white and green and red. The red is a little pinkish and the green is a little more olivey, but they're going to be just fine on the cookies that I am planning. And I asked Don, I mean, here's this company. It's called Watkins, and on the cover it says Big W since 1868. And Dan, I wonder if that's the Watkins company that used to, really truly, I am not that young anymore. I remember door-to-door salespeople in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
and there was a Watkins man.
Yes.
And I wonder, it might be the
I'm
same
I'm guessing
company.
It's the same company. They obviously don't do door-to-door anymore.
No, but Watkins used to sell, well, and people couldn't always get these things. They didn't have your food co-ops or your internets at that time. So little bottles of vanilla or some cleaning products that were kind of in little bottles.
Well, and, I think Watkins also makes, like, food colorings in, you know, the kind like you would usually buy McCormick's, but they're natural colors, too. So if you want to make colored frostings for your cookies, they have that. And they have the green and the red colored sugar, right?
Yes.
I have the red.
Ah, good. Maybe I should get the green. I think that's good. Good. Because, like I said, nothing says Christmas or the holidays like sprinkles. They're good. They're good. Although I do sometimes break down and add to my sprinkle list, I usually keep a little bottle of those, I think, I don't remember what they're called, but they're little red hot candies.
Red Hots.
Red Hots, that's what they're called.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and they're hot.
Yeah, yeah. Because
there's a very spicy cinnamon.
Right, it's cinnamon, it's Christmas. Mm-hmm. You know, and I like
And those are bright red, so they probably have the...
They probably do, but usually... Now, but if you want to put a nose on a iced
gingerbread man,
or I use them as little berries on cookies that I make to look like a wreath.
Oh.
So I figure one or two won't kill you, and they're darn pretty. So there you go.
What's your basic recipe for your cutout cookies?
Oh, goodness. I didn't even bring it, but it's a white cookie that has a little bit, just not much, a little bit of sour cream in it.
Oh.
And it's a white cookie. And
do you have to refrigerate it?
No, because I make it right away. It's a white
roll-out.
It's a white roll-out cookie. Yeah. Also, and that is kind of my basic. You can do a lot of things, different things with it. But I found the recipe for oatmeal cutout cookies, which you can cut those out. But because they have little bits of oatmeal in it, they're not as sharp-edged as...
What do you use? A quick cooking?
Yes.
More? Yeah. I wonder how they would be if you used, instead of oatmeal, if you used the early morning harvest oat flour.
You should try it. We should try. I try, because cookies are okay. I often try different kinds of flour in there, and I think I've tried, let's see. Yeah, this oatmeal cutout cookies calls for 2.5 cups all-purpose flour. And you can either use 1 cup quick or old-fashioned oats uncooked. So
now they would be pretty lumpy with old-fashioned ones.
It is,
probably.
It is, but but that's kind of the charm. And with some of these natural sprinkles on it, they're going to be good. And I may not get like your sharp-edged cookies, like your, you know, a reindeer or something like that. They won't look like that. I'll maybe just do circles or stars. So we'll see.
Stars are good.
I think they'll be fine. And the stars are a little little misshapen. Well, they're falling stars, they're shooting stars. That's good. Good. Anyway, yeah, I have some other favorites, and Christmas tastes like this to me, so.
All right, I'm going to ask you to talk about your Pfeffernusse cookies. I love, love, love them.
You asked. All right, Pfeffernusse. Pfeffernusse.
It's German, right?
It's German. That is
pepper or something.
It means roughly pepper cookie, and I don't know if I have the spelling right, but that's how it was in my mom's recipe in the recipe I got from my mom. So these are small pepper cookies, pepper-based cookies.
They're maybe like an inch and a half maximum. Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of variation. Some people like Pfeffernusse cookies bigger and softer, kind of like a ginger snap, but they're flavored with, and I used to go heavy on this, cinnamon and black pepper, nutmeg, allspice, ground cloves, and cardamom, and then drop a couple drops of anise oil. The anise, some people don't like that. I love it, and I love to go heavy on those spices, especially the anise oil and the cinnamon. And you make little cookies, okay? Now, but some people like them a little larger and softer, sort of like a ginger snap. Mm-hmm. But in my tradition, see, I had two sides of the family. I had my mother's side, which kind of made the softer, real spicy tasting, but the softer kind. My dad's side, and from my Aunt Ramona Noctigal, I got the smaller, crunchy, they're like little buttons. They're like little quarters. They do raise a little bit, so they're not like flat. But they are perfect to balance on a spoon and dip into coffee or tea. Aunt Mona was not much on presentation, but she baked up a storm. Go to her house on Christmas, and she'd get out a ice cream tin, rice cream pail full of Pfeffernusse, set them in the middle of the table, pass out the spoons, and make a pot of coffee. And that was, I like those things. They soak up things, and you can eat them by the handful. And they're kind of like Lutheran biscotti. You know how biscotti is kind of dry?
They are a little like biscotti, and they were reminding me of my friend Paula, who's from Barcelona, when you said the anise oil. Their traditional cookie is a biscotti. It's called a Kirkinyoles. So it's almond, but it also is flavored with anise. And every time I make them for her, she just is so happy because it reminds her of home. Now, I had not ever eaten the real thing from Barcelona, but once she said, oh, biscotti with almonds and anise, I just sort of did it. And anise is really, so you use anise oil.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I suppose that's a recipe that was in my family's recipe.
Well, because I fuddled around with this for a while because grinding the anise, I wasn't getting enough flavor.
Yeah.
So the anise oil is a good idea. Or there's a Turkish liquor called raki.
Ha.
Rakki or something like that, which is anise. And I put a little of that in a batch one time, and that worked really well. Yeah.
It would soak through the
whole. Yeah. See? It's to get that anise flavor.
I mean, if you're going to go with Christmas flavors, go for it. Yes.
Well, I like with the Pfeffernusse, and when Lana brings a plate of cookies for Christmas, there are five or six kinds, and some are decorated, and of course, since she's a visual artist, it's very pretty, the whole thing. And then she's got the little Pfeffernusse kind of tucked in there, and I kind of always dive on those first. But
see, everybody likes different kinds. That's a good just Christmas cookies. And another one that I really like that it reminds me of, my mom always made something called a mocha nut butter ball, which who would not like that? Butter, sugar, vanilla, eggs. It calls for instant coffee granules and a half cup of cocoa, nuts, flour. And they're little, you know.
What kind of nuts?
She says finely chopped. I usually use walnuts.
Walnuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's good. Although, see, since you can use two teaspoons of instant coffee, the coffee flavor is really good in that.
But, and you have to bake them, right?
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
They're kind of
they're cakey.
Chocolatey coffee. I mean, I often put a little coffee in anything chocolate because it doesn't make it taste coffee necessarily, but it drives that chocolate flavor really deeply.
That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing. So, and also, although they're not specifically Christmas, I like ginger snaps, so I usually make a few of those. And I haven't made these for quite a few years. I just was looking through the old recipe page, old recipe book there. I make a rice flour cookie. The recipe is from Iran, actually. And it's rice flour and rose water.
Oh.
Who would think? And lots of butter.
I remember you making those. Yeah.
It's a real nice contrast.
Very delicate. Yeah.
And it's kind of nice. I mean, when you think, okay, here we are, Christmas.
Well, and then you could decorate them with those rose-flavored sprinkles.
Good idea.
From burlap and barrel.
Good idea. Or even any kind. I usually do put sprinkles on them because of these little white poofs.
Right.
Yeah. And that's good. See, I got interested in this rice flour cookie. For one thing, it's rice flour. It's gluten-free. It does have butter in it and butter and egg. But it's really good. We think about cookies, you know? And it's Christmas. And really, everybody's attention should be on the birth of Jesus, you know, in the Middle East. And all of our eating cookie traditions are from Northern Europe, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, well.
And all this sugar and stuff. So I thought, from Iran, how nice. It's kind of like, what would Jesus bake for Christmas, you know? Kind of it's kind of nice to have different tastes from around the world. I also kind of like
you
like
might get some heavy disagreement about those things these days.
I know. We can disagree about everything.
Well,
but that's mine. And I also used to like to put things like dates out for this time of year, too. You know, that's another traditionally.
Well, now, talking about dates, it is time, if you want to make a fruitcake, it's really good to make them now and then kind of wrap them in cheesecloth and water them, so to speak, with whatever you're going to put, whether it's rum or brandy or something, and let the flavors kind of meld together. So I'm probably not going to make any this year, but I did do the first step because I do this a lot. I made my candied orange peel.
Ha!
Because, you know, fruitcakes have been given a bad rap and called the doorstopper since I was a kid, because at that point, a lot of fruitcakes began to be commercially made. And the fruits, like if you buy, I mean, you can go to the supermarket and buy candied fruits, you know, in the baking aisle, and it's pretty ghastly stuff.
Well, talking about the food coloring.
Yeah.
Well, you know, your day glow green, your day glow.
Like the cherries that you buy or something. But even this kind of, they're supposed to be citrus fruit peels, but they have no flavor. So once you have made your own, I mean, I always make lemon. I mean, I always make orange. Sometimes I also make lemon, and sometimes I even make grapefruit.
They're all good.
And they're wonderful for baking. So my nod to starting the holidays was to go ahead and make my candied orange peel, because you've got it and you can do whatever you want to do with it. I did try a new method this year.
Oh.
Usually I use the joy of cooking method, which is basically, you know, you take the skin off of the orange and you boil them. Throw out the water, boil them again, throw out the water, boil them again, throw out the water. You're getting the bitterness out of it.
And you might want to start with some organic oranges.
Oh, yes.
You're going to eat those.
Yeah, you're going to eat the skin. So this new recipe, instead of the boil and throw it away, had you take the skins and put them in water with a plate on top, completely submersed in the water, for 2 days, changing the water only once. So I did that and it worked really, really well.
Oh, that makes more sense. I like that.
I liked it too. I really did. And then once they, you know, once you've either boiled them and thrown away the water or let them sit for 2 days and thrown away the water, then you cut them into the little quarter inch pieces and then you boil them in the sugar water. Now I always, and this new recipe, which it does not say in The Joy of Cooking, says to add the juice of the orange back into the boiling medium in the sugar syrup, which I always did anyway because I'm like trying to punch the flavor up. So this year I added the orange juice back in, and I do put a pinch of salt in and a pinch of pepper, you know me. And then I added some orange oil and a little fiore di cicilia oil, that's another flavoring that we use kind of all year round. It's something you order from King Arthur Flour, and it's a lemon vanilla, I believe, mm-hmm. combination. It just tastes floral. And what else did I put in there? Oh, this year I did a little trick, which I'm using more and more. I put a little citric acid in it too, to punch up the acidic bite.
Oh, the oranges wouldn't be enough.
Why not?
Yeah.
And then I boiled them. You boil them for a couple of hours, and then what I used to do is just keep boiling till there was no liquid left, and then spread them out on the baking sheet to dry off. But this one has you just after a couple of hours pouring them into a colander and straining the extra liquid off, and then spread them out to dry. And then as they're cooling or when they are cooled, then you put some more sugar on them to make them not stick together in a big lump.
That's a good taste.
It worked really well, and I'm quite delighted with it.
Oh, yum. Another taste of the holidays. You're listening to KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Talking about the holidays here. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. So, orange peel. So many good things to look forward to and things to do now.
If you're going to make your own fruit cake, start by making your own candied orange peel at the very least. And then put in things like dates mm-hmm. and maybe some apricots, you know, and mix your nuts up yourself.
I find a good addition is, I like this taste, dried papaya.
Oh!
And they're pretty. They're kind of pinkish. So that's, yeah.
Or dried mango.
Oh, yeah. Cut up bits.
Yeah, little bits. But use the quality of the fruits and the nuts are what makes it really good. And I was so pleased with this new, you know, sitting in water for 2 days method that I think I might even make some grapefruit peels this year. Because if you cut them slightly larger, then in your cookie display, you can also just put some candied peels out. Because people really, I'm always surprised because I've got them sitting in the kitchen using, you know, ready for, and slowly they're disappearing. And I am not the only one eating them. They're just really yummy. Oh, the other thing I did this weekend was the cardamom sugared cranberries.
Oh, good. You did
that. Yeah, I did it. I think I made a little mistake. I think I didn't make my... I've done it for a few years, and now I can't remember where the recipe is, so I sort of had to make it up. It's basically you boil up a sugar syrup with a lot of cardamom and some pepper and a tiny bit of salt in it, but dominant cardamom. And I think I did not make my sugar syrup quite thick enough because it didn't adhere to the cranberries.
Ooh.
well enough to let the sugar set on them, so I might have to re-dip them or something. But it's very simple. You take raw cranberries. You don't want any heat applied to the cranberries because, of course, they'll turn into...
cranberry sauce.
Yeah, in a half a second. So make this cardamom syrup. Now I've got a whole bunch of it sitting because it's also good for other holiday things too, not the least of which are cocktails. But cardamom in Christmas is, you know... it's a good thing to have. So you boil up the syrup, then you let it come to room temperature. Then you put a box of, you know, raw cranberries, pick through to make sure there's no bad ones, plump them into the syrup and let them sit 10 or 15 minutes. They're not going to really absorb it, but they will get coated with it. And then you fish them out with a slotted spoon and spread them out on a cookie sheet. Usually I put a sill pad under it so it's not so sticky. And then you kind of let them start to air dry till they get sticky enough. This is why your syrup needs to be thicker. I'm going to have to reboil my syrup and reduce it. But, and then once they get almost dry but still a little sticky, then you put them on another baking sheet that has a mixture of more sugar with lots of cardamom in it. And then you just kind of roll them around. Now, you can find instructions for this. I did Google sugared cranberries, and it tells you the basics of how to do it. I did not find one with the cardamom. I'm telling you, the cardamom makes all of the difference. But they are really, they keep for a while, mm-hmm. and long enough to make decorations on Christmas things and stuff mm-hmm. like that. Like if you're making... if I were making an apple pie for Christmas, I might... Or a cheesecake. If I wanted to make a cheesecake, I might decorate the top with those sugared cranberries or things like that. So that's another nice thing to... And they are just nice for nibbling.
They are.
They really are. So, anyway, I'm getting all of this ready to... Because I make fudge every year. And I make different flavors. And I have not decided what I'm going to make this year, but... given that I really like my orange peels, I may make some, you know, orange walnut or orange pecan or I'm not sure yet. So here are the basic, this is your basic fudge recipe. Now I make it with dark chocolate. So you take, 18 ounces of dark, this is for one sort of 8-inch square baking pan. So take the Pyrex pan and first you line it with foil because you want to be able to lift the fudge out once it's solidified. Then you make a double boiler sort of thing, which for me is just a metal mixing bowl over a pot of boiling water. Now the water should not touch the bowl, right? Because you can scorch the chocolate. So anyway, you set that up and then you put in 18 ounces of dark chocolate chopped. I often just use chocolate chips. Now, if you want it sweeter, you can use regular chocolate chips, but I try to buy the darkest ones I can find, which are at least 60%. I like to make it really dark instead of that sweet, soupy stuff that people like. Then you put in 3/4 cup of heavy cream, and you're melting the chocolate in the cream. Then you put in some 1/2 cup of organic corn syrup or other corn syrup, or sometimes I don't use corn syrup. If I want a fruit flavor in it, I put in a jelly. The thing with fudge is you don't want too much liquid because then it won't set up and get hard. But if you stick to these proportions of 2/3 cup of heavy cream, 1/2 cup of some kind of syrup or sugary thing, and 18 ounces of chocolate, you're going to come out all right.
Oh, good.
So you melt all of those together, and then you start your flavoring, you know. And, you know, like if I'm going to do an orange fudge, I would probably chop up some of the orange peel and mix that in and maybe mix some pecans in, which you could toast before you put in. Or you can use walnuts. Sometimes I put in cocoa nibs. You can stir in, like you could put in the orange oil or the Fiore di Sicilia, or you could put in vanilla, or you could even go almond if you wanted. I mean, you know, This is what it makes it your signature fudge. Every year I do something different. This is also a place you can put in some liquors for flavoring. However, just be careful about getting, if you put too much liquid in it, it won't set up hard enough. So if you're putting in, you know, you could put in a little less cream, not too much, because you need that. But be careful. And if you have a disaster, and once you've poured it into the pan and cooled off and it doesn't get hard enough, then you can put it back in very carefully and melt it and add more chocolate to it.
Oh, that's too bad. Add more chocolate.
Okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, to make it
thicker.
Thicker, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, but hopefully you don't have to get there because it's really annoying and kind of disappointing. But
well, also you could put it in a jar and pour it over ice cream or over cake.
Well,
or
you're not probably going to make it. You could thin it and make chocolate syrup, but it would have stuff in it.
Okay.
Well, which is okay, you know. I mean,
okay.
There's no bad chocolate here as long as you don't burn it. Now, I do put a pinch of sea salt in it, and I usually put a little bit of either espresso powder, or I actually use the one from King Arthur's. They make a special espresso powder that's useful for baking.
So oh, yes.
I put a little of
handy.
That in.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the fudge. Then once it's all melted and it doesn't take long, then you pour the whole thing into the foil lined pan.
Do you have to grease the foil lined pan?
No, because there's the cream is in the
cream.
And there's cocoa solids too.
Uh-huh.
So there's plenty of fats in the fudge itself. And then you just pour it into the pan and set it in the fridge, and as when it completely cools off, it should be the consistency of fudge. There you go. And then I have a whole collection I've bought of little red and green candy papers, and I cut them up, and I have little boxes I put them in, and I tie red ribbons on it, and that is my sort of go-to Christmas giving, homemade things.
This is stuff you can do ahead, and you can make pretty little giveaways.
Yeah, the fudge, you could make fudge tomorrow, and if you kept it in the fridge, it would still be fine to be cutting it up and giving it away through the whole holiday season.
Oh.
So I don't make just this one 18-ounce of chocolate batch. I probably make, you can easily double this and put it in a larger pan.
Okay. And it won't affect the as you're cooking it.
No.
Okay.
No. Sometimes they make two or three batches because it's become pretty popular.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
People rely on you, Donna.
Yeah, yes, for yes, Donna's fudge. Yes.
Now,
but we never know what flavor we're going to get. I have to say, last year I did a thing that I think I'm going to do this year. I bought some truffle butter at Wheatsfields in the refrigerated department.
Whew.
And I melted some of it into one of the, it was really good. I think I might do that again, maybe this year with, I don't know, walnuts or something. I don't know.
Cool.
But
we've got all kinds of ideas going here. And at the beginning, I said I wanted to ask you about liqueurs. Because, actually for cakes and some cookies and some candies, they want to throw out these suggestions of things you can add. And I'm kind of at a loss. I mean, I don't generally have a liquor cabinet that's got stuff in, and then when I go out to buy it, there's the top shelf stuff, there's the bottom shelf stuff. I don't know which is kind of what I should be looking for. Give us some advice.
Well, for one thing, when you're using it to cook, you're not using large quantities, okay? The liqueur that you put in a cake is not going to get anybody drunk. First of all, in most instances, when it bakes, the alcohol evaporates. So what you're going for is the flavor. We did get this book. It's called Gâteau, The Surprising Simplicity of French Cakes by Alexandra Carpanzano. And in it, she has a good list, a good reference list of the spirits that French housewives use in their cakes.
So that book is a wonderful book. In almost every cake, you put a little dish of that, a little dash of that. And most of this stuff was sort of new to me. So what does she say?
Well, she lists quite a few that we have around here. Our amaretto, which is it's actually Italian. She says this will augment the flavor of almonds in a cake, and it's delicious in ganache and chantilly. I do use that. And for me, that kind of has a nice Christmassy flavor to it. She also lists Armagnac, which I have to tell you, I went looking for last week for something else I wanted. You cannot find that in Ames. Okay, so give that one up if it's called for. Instead, you can use cognac. It's not the same, but cognac is, she says, cognac offers a rounded, enveloping elegance that gives a complex dimension to even simple chantilly cream.
And chantilly is whipped cream.
Whipped cream.
Whipped cream.
Whipped cream.
But right. Chantilly is so much prettier to say.
Yeah. She mentions Calvados, which is apple brandy. That's typical of Normandy. Now, I'm going to read what she says here because she makes a good distinction. Calvados is essential in apple cakes. I say that as someone who spent childhood weekends in Normandy, where they say otherwise, to say otherwise would be sacrilegious. The best Calvados rival Armagnac in depth and beauty. Of course, you can buy Calvados in Ames, not Armagnac. But the taste of the apple sets it apart. It bears almost no relationship to Applejack, which is too young, too fruity, and too fiery to compete. So do not substitute Applejack for Calvados in a recipe.
Yeah, you're not going for like these high fire whiskeys and
no,
and
you want the fruit flavor.
We're talking fruit flavor. Okay.
She mentions a brand, Clear Creek Distillery, makes an apple brandy that has been aged 8 years and is the closest American option.
Oh, so, let's take a little break here. We'll come back to talk more about liqueurs and Christmassy things. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more at www.khoyfm.org. Support this fine radio station. Welcome back. We're talking liqueurs and liquors for, well, not necessarily just pouring yourself a glass. We're talking about the stuff that goes into cakes and candies and cookies. And as I mentioned before, this kind of stuff shows up in recipes. And I'm kind of baffled sometimes, but Don's shedding some light. And I already asked your folks, and no, beer is not a substitute.
No. Oh, okay. These are liqueurs, which... you know, you can keep as if for additions to cocktails, but they're really also wonderful for baking. So in this book, Gâteau, The Surprising Simplicity of French Cakes. So here's the rest that's on her list. So she's got for orange, Cointreau or Grand Marnier.
Grand Marnier is an orange thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like if I'm going to make my fudge this orange year with my orange peels, I may put some Grand Marnier in it. Now here's one of my favorites, crème de cassis. Okay, because that is black currant, our favorite black currant. It's, for example, if you've ever had a cure royale, which is champagne and cassis.
Ooh.
It's lovely for mixing those kinds of things. It mixes really well with, as she says, raspberries or all kinds of berry flavored things. If you put a little crème de cassis in it, it kind of gives this really round, dark undertone to it. That's just lovely. She also mentions crème de framboise, which is raspberries. She's also got crème de pêche, which I don't really use, but those are, you know, those are peach flavored or raspberry flavored. Now, here's one I really like to use, Frangelico.
Oh.
It is, I think it's Italian even, but it's hazelnut.
Oh, for goodness sake.
She says it's a wonderful alternate to hazelnut extract. Frangelico has notes of vanilla as well as a touch of coffee. That's a really nice one for, what did I make 1 year? Oh, I made a frozen hazelnut tort or something, and I used, of course, hazelnuts in it and Frangelico. It works really well. Okay, she also mentions limoncello. She says, I like this limoncello liqueur. on a bowl of cherries or in whipped cream or as a soaking syrup, for brushed on a Genoise or brightening a buttercream. It's a little, she says the Sardinian version is a little less sweet. It is sweet. And
oh, so we're talking citrusy.
Yeah, limoncello.
Okay. Okay.
Lemon is lemon.
I'm familiar with that just as a lemonade drink.
You can make your own limoncello. People do. They take, you cut up a bunch of lemons, put in some sugar, and you let it, what's that? That white lightning plain liquor that you can buy around here. It's not vodka. It's something else.
Oh, good. I don't know.
I don't know. You know, straight alcohol.
Okay.
Yeah. And so you let the lemons and the sugar sit for a while. I don't know, a month or two or something. And then strain it off. And then you have your own homemade limoncello. Oh. And I would use that more in the summer. Now, she also mentions rum, but that's dark rum.
Oh, okay. Now, yeah. See, rum. I'm
dark
not much
and spicy
for,
rum.
There's different kinds, like, so I don't know.
Meyer's rum or one of those. Those are good for, like, if you do your fruitcake and you want to soak it in rum, you could use one of those dark and spicy rums. She says for the French, rum is ubiquitous in French cakes as much as we use vanilla here. She also mentions Saint Germain, which I like. It's very mild. It's elderflower. She says it likes limes, lemons, and roses. So those are the flavors she would mix. Now, the not French ones that I use, bourbon, because this is Iowa. Let me tell you that a homemade butterscotch pudding with bourbon in it is sublime.
Very good.
Yeah. And then, of course, brandy or Benedictine in brandy, which it's kind of pricey, but it's really, really delicious. Either of those are nice for putting on cakes or in whipped cream or what have you. Might be good in fudge too.
Huh. See, all of these good
things. Now, don't go out and buy all of them.
Yeah, I was going to ask
just
you.
Just pick a fruit or two.
Look at your recipe. See what.
And maybe you got some bourbon in your cupboard already.
Yeah, and not beer. Beer doesn't work.
No. But not for desserts anyway.
That's true. I have added a shot of beer, like to deglaze a pan if I'm doing a crock pot or something.
But yeah, anyway, for savory things.
But yeah. Okay. Oh, this is good.
So, you know, keep a bottle of something spiffy in there for your...
Something spiffy.
Yeah, okay. And I'm unlike Julia Childs, I do not sip while I'm cooking because then I lose my ability to sequence, which in making food is kind of important, so...
Write that down, folks. Ability to sequence.
This goes in at that point, and then you go, where was I? And how much did I put in there? And
Multitasking is good.
I mean, maybe Julia could do it on television because she had producers and people around to help her.
She has staff.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't try that. So.
Oh, very good. Baking. Baking with liqueurs and... Yeah, like I said, there's some things that just call for these fancy things. And if you know what flavor you're going for, like the fruit flavors, I think that helps a lot.
Well, most times, you know, if you read a recipe and it's got something in it, if it's a liqueur, you can almost always leave it out. It won't taste the same, but if your other ingredients are good, it'll be fine. It's just kind of like an extra little flavor boost.
Yeah, like
except for things like rum cake, which
is rum. I mean, if you have coffee.
Everclear. Okay, we just got it. We just got a text from Mike Metz.
Oh,
Everclear is what you make the limoncello out of. Yes, it is. Thank you very much. Everclear.
Saved our neck again. You ask the science guys, and they pipe up with the important information.
Yeah, well, be careful with that Everclear.
Yeah. Like my dad used to say when it came to strong liquors, you got to stay away from that stuff. It'll blow stumps. Yes, siree. But not that we didn't enjoy a little bit of stuff around the holidays. I think it's pretty good. So we learned a lot of good things. We learned about sprinkles and orange peels and baking and
peppermint. And getting ready we're going to slide into Christmas before you know it.
I want to end this with a poem to share, and you may think it's kind of funny for me to read on this topic, but remember, The weather outside our windows wasn't always like this. Last summer, I remember being pretty warm, and long about midsummer. It's kind of, we had a wonderful surprise here in central Iowa. Look back on the summer, and this was a great year for peaches, Donna.
It was really unusual because the rest of the country did not have great peaches. I think the Georgia peaches and the North Carolina peaches were completely bust from an early frost, and we were like going, oh no, there's not going to be any peaches this year. And then lo and behold,
peaches.
Yeah, Helen Gunderson had the greatest peaches I've ever eaten. It was really marvelous.
And yours truly, who never grew a peach before in her life. There was this stuff hanging from my peach tree, and it was peaches.
And the trees were so loaded, the branches broke, so we won't have them again for a long time.
No, we don't. So we are, just a look back. I'll look back to a really fine peach season. I ran across a poem by an author named Lee Young Lee. I believe he's from, let's see, from Thailand? Anyway, he writes, lives in the United States. He lives in Utah now, of course. But, yeah, there we go. But he was born of Chinese parents, okay? Came to this country, and he's a writer, and he wrote this lovely poem about peaches called From Blossoms. From blossoms come this brown paper bag of peaches we bought from the boy at the bend in the road will be turned toward a sign painted peaches. From laden boughs, from hands, from sweet fellowship in the bins comes nectar at the roadside. Succulent peaches we devour, dusky skin and all. Here comes the familiar dust of summer. Dust we eat. Oh, to take what we love inside, to carry within us an orchard, to eat not only the skin, but the shade, not only the sugar, but the days, to hold the fruit in our hands, adore it, and then bite into the round jubilance of peach. There are days we live as if death were nowhere in the background, from joy to joy to joy, from wing to wing, from blossom to blossom to impossible blossom to sweet impossible blossoms.
And I took some of those peaches and cooked them up a tiny little bit in some sugar and put them in the freezer and we'll bring them out at Christmas time.
So we will remember summer. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. We talked today about cookies and inviting folks over and celebrating the days before Christmas, as the days are getting shorter, we can do some pre-Christmas baking and planning. And, well, now, if you don't like to bake, don't bake. Just be the recipient
of
baking. Well,
making fudge is not baking.
Oh, okay. It's not.
No.
Okay. Oh, that's true.
Just want to clarify. There's no baking involved. It's really easy.
Oh, that's true. Very good.
And we, but we didn't even mention nut brittles. That's a whole other thing.
Oh, get into nut brittles at a different show. Very good. I'd like to mention there's some upcoming things. Tuba Christmas in Ames, if you want to get your tuba
on. Oh, goody. Where is it this year?
I don't know, but it's December 2nd. I think it's in C.Y. Stevens.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. And December 16th, there is a holiday farmer's market in Ames at the middle school. That's a Saturday. Huh.
I think it's an unusual venue.
Well, it is, but we wanted a place where everybody could be
together. It's big, yeah.
And big and good, yeah. So that's great. That's great. And we have a podcast.
We certainly do. If you like that format, you just go to wherever you listen to podcasts and you put in Donna Lana, that's one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, kitchen, and there we will be.
Good, good. Well, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We come to you live at noon. You wouldn't guess we're live, would you? Okay, we're live at noon on Tuesdays. We repeat it at 7 p.m. or any time on this fine radio station. Go to the website. With music by the Barn Owl Band. And encourage you to spend some time in the kitchen and invite your friends and neighbors in and make some nice homemade gifts. That's a good idea. We'll end with a tune called Closing the Cottage by Barn Owl Band member Mike Bell. He wrote a lot of good tunes. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Great engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.